Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Yes, sir, the pressure. The pressure, are you letting it get to you? Welcome back to the What Are You Made Of show here. And that one studio, it's your boy C-Rock. Another great guest for you today to find out what they're made of. You know, we bring some people in here that have had success so that we can show you the true journey to success. You know, it's invisible. A lot of times you can't see what's going on. You don't see everything that people have overcome, went through, the sleepless nights, the stress, the anxiety, the relationship stresses. You don't see all that. You know, people don't share that stuff most of the time. Well, guess what? When they come on here, they have to share it. And we dig a little deep into it. Because I believe that if we figure out ways that other people have overcome things, we can see it for ourselves. And today I have Ford Stakes in the building. He's a business growth accelerator with over 20 years of experience, has redefined the formula for success, generating over $1 billion in sales worldwide for companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500s. As the president and CEO of Prime Concepts Group, Ford specializes in helping businesses attract loyal and repeat customers, expand brand awareness, and ignite innovation. This guy's a powerhouse, guys. Welcome to the show, Ford.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
This guy's received a lot of awards, 3 patents he's been awarded, and also AI. He's into AI now as well, engineering AI. Man, listen, this is a big deal right now, AI, and we're going to get into this a little bit. But before we do all that, Ford, I want to ask you the question I start the show off the same way every time, and that's with this question, what are you made of?
Well, you know, when you started the opening of your show today talking about, you know, the success and the challenges that people go through, I think a lot of people don't want to talk about the things that they've gone through, but that's what's made me who I am. You know, I started as a kid in the projects as an orphan, paying $17 a month for government housing. And so, you know, years later, 17 businesses, not all of them never went bankrupt or anything, but 3 went multimillion. And my largest company had 150 employees. So, you know, I've learned a few things over the years, but I've had to pay some pretty damning, or can I say that?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you?
Pretty expensive tuition. So what am I made of? I would say hard knocks and persistence.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Look, and I want to hear some of these stories because, you know, I've been through stuff, you know, and the greatest thing about this, I was just thinking about this the other day, Ford, how thankful and grateful I am for the life I'm living right now, for the things that I have been through so that I don't have to deal with it now. And the understanding that I do not have to have like specific people in my environment. I don't have to, I can choose who I spend my time with, choose who I have in my company, choose who are my customers, versus feeling like this scarcity mentality where when it comes to employees, I think we've all been through this if we're entrepreneurs. If we have employees, like, you know, we have the scarcity mentality that, you know, we have to have this employee because they produce and we have to put up with their bullshit. Because then if not, I have to go find somebody else. Or same thing with customers as well, right? So, I'm looking forward to getting into this, like, vulnerability with you, man. Like, what are some of the things that, like, are on the top of your mind as soon as I come into talking about this journey that you know, this entrepreneurial journey that you go on? Like, what are some things?
I think it's such a great question. And for your listeners and viewers, the question really becomes, you know, what's the highest and best use of your time? You know, for years, I built a company up. I had a marketing agency, still have it. It's transitioned. But I built it up thinking that because I was a kid from the projects that I needed to have people. I wanted to be the president and CEO of Prime Concepts Group, you know, and it sounded good and it gave me authority and it gave me self-worth. But what it also gave me is a real bunch of pain in the ass pitas, which are pain in the ass. Experiences, which, and so I think in business, you know, C-Rock, people are good at one of 3 things. They're either good at making or delivering the product or service, marketing and sales, or managing. And for me, I was always good in delivering whatever the product or service was, being innovative, solutions based, you know, taking care of the customer. And marketing and sales really where my sweet spot is. The management part, I was kind of like, oh, I'll just hire somebody and, you know, they'll just run it. But the management part and the leadership part of running the team is why years I wasn't profitable, even making 7 figures, mid 7 figures. I mean, I was profitable, but at 5% profit, and I was taking a salary of like $250,000, which is a lot of money, but not compared to $30 million, right? I mean, so you know, it's not what you earn, it's what you keep. So it sounds impressive. I mean, the National Speakers Association, which is a association for professional speakers, every year there's conferences, and every year that you sit down at the table, how's your year? Oh, this is great. You know, I made all this money. But, you know, it's kind of like at the casino. They tell you what they won, but they don't tell you what they lost.
Yeah, you know, this is so funny you're saying this, and I thought of this idea that one of my mentors early on when I was like 21 told me. He's like, listen, when all these people start talking about, we go to these conventions and like these regional events and all this, and they talk about how much they've sold and how much money they're making. He's like, always cut it in half, and it's probably less than that.
Yeah, I would say cut it in half and cut it in half again, and then you know, be careful. I mean, I'm not saying that people weren't successful and didn't learn things, but their ego got in their way, or their imposter syndrome got in the way from just saying, hey, you know, I'm really struggling right now, and taking that honest look. And I've had to have several of those honest looks in the mirror, just going, you know, what do I want to do? What's my life worth? And, you know, that's why I've transitioned a lot of things for this year.
Yeah, well, so we'll get into that too. But like, let me ask you this. So as you're going forward and, you know, you're seeing things happen, you're learning on your own. Some of us are hard-headed. We got to learn on our own. We don't take mentorship well. What do you think the word patience has to do with entrepreneurship? And do most people lack patience? And if they would understand the concept that you can't birth an adult, right? Or a frog has to be a tadpole first. They understand that concept. They would be able to push through a lot of the adversity in entrepreneurship and not just quit, right? If they understood that it's just a matter of like doing something, failing, quote unquote failing, learning from it, taking the data, reapplying it with the new data, and then just doing that over and over and over again as it snowballs, right? But patience, has that come up?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it patience. You know, I think it's critical thinking and open-minded. You know, so if you're a critical thinker, you know that some things aren't going to work. You're going to have to try and fail. You want to read, you know, you can either learn from other people's experiences or your own experiences. So I'm an avid reader. I go to a lot of events. I attend webinars. I go to workshops. I listen to Audible books. I watch YouTube and TikTok, and I'm constantly consuming information, but not just blindly. I'm looking at it through a critical eye. I mean, right now there's a movie that's popular on Netflix called Leave the World Behind, you know, and some people thought, oh, it's the worst movie ever. Another was like, hey, look at all these Easter eggs. For me, it's just critical thinking. I'm just looking at it going, well, what can I learn from this? And what look from the whole experience. So I think patience is a huge part of success, but it's, you have to go in the right direction. You know, it's like you can run east all you want looking for a sunset. You may be motivated. You may be taking a lot of action, but if you're pointed in the wrong damn direction, you're never going to get where you're going. So I think it takes that overarching critical thinker to be able to take information in, surround yourself with smart people that are call you on your crap and to tell you, you know, what you need to hear. And then you being open-minded enough to be able to say, wow, I wonder if that will work. Cause that what stops most companies is as a strategic advisor. And I work with brands big and small, like you said, in the introduction, you know, what stops them is they're closed-minded. They're not paying attention to what's actually going on, and they're holding on to old beliefs that no longer serve them.
Yeah. And how do you identify that with them when you work with someone?
Well, you hear it in their language patterns. So, you know, if I give somebody two or three good ideas, or they come to me with a challenge, I'm looking to solve X, whatever X is, whether it's an operations, marketing, sales, HR, staffing, whatever it is. And as soon as you start to give them ideas, if they start to cut them down or tell you why it won't work, then I always dig deeper. I'm like, well, all right, C-Rock, tell me why won't that work? And they're like, well, I've talked to everybody and they all say this. And I'm like, who's they? Like, who's everybody? Well, I have a friend. Okay, what does your friend do? And when you start to drill down to the source, they shouldn't be listening to that person anyway. They're full of shit. So it's like, you know, who are you basing your decision-making on? We all want to justify, you know, we make decisions emotionally. We justify them logically. And so when everybody makes a decision, they always use they. You know, they told me, or I asked everybody. And those are warning signs for me to ask more questions. Like, okay, give me the names of three people. Like, what were their roles? What were their experiences? I'll give you a quick example. We used to do an event in Hawaii called the Speakers Institute. We did it in the 90s. It was $10,000 for 4 days to learn how to become a professional speaker. And this is way before the internet, before everybody, you know, did this. And we did it even after the internet. But the point is, we would send out a 51-page sales letter. And I showed it to my wife, who's highly educated, you know, lots of degrees and smart. And I said, hey, honey, here's the letter I'm sending out. And she said, no one's going to sign up. No one's going to read a 51 page letter. And I said, well, let's test it. It's never too long, only too boring, right? If the content's just like an episode, if the content's mm-hmm. engaging, people will listen if the letter's engaging. So we sent it out and we got 65 people to come to the event at 10 grand. So do the math. So it was very profitable for us to do that event and subsequently events after that. But there's a lot of lessons in here for your listeners. I hope that they subscribe to your show. I hope that they save it, bookmark it, download it, listen to it again, because I like to throw as much into an episode as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good 65, like pretty good response rate for 10 grand. And it was just a sales letter, like via email?
It was 3,000 people. It was direct mail, 51 direct pages. Mail. So it was like 26, whatever the math works out to be, front and back with a cover in a Mylar envelope. And we sent it to 3,000 contacts. So it was an expensive mailing, but it paid off. And we had one person rip it up into little pieces, return it to us with a letter that said, I can't believe I wasted 3 hours reading this thing. You should be ashamed. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm proud. Like I should put that onto my wall, because they read the whole damn thing, but they were mad that they read the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good lesson. It's never too long, only too boring.
Yeah. 100%. So, you know, one thing about this, like, since you brought this up, talking about like these speaker trainings and this and that, I've seen a lot and studied a lot, and I've gone and listened to a lot of speakers. One thing that drives me nuts is people that like fall into the same old routine. I'm such a original type person, like vulnerable, transparent, authentic, be myself. And I cannot stand following somebody else's format. You shouldn't follow anybody else's format.
Even though the problem with new speakers, it works. When new speakers get involved in the business, and we're talking about speakers, trainers, authors, experts, consultant, whatever, when they get into the business, you know, they use everybody else's quotes. They use all their content. Now, certainly, you know, you could argue there's no new ideas. I'm sure I've probably said something that people have heard before. That's fine. But we're not talking about that as much as we're talking about that they don't have their own style. Like they're trying to be somebody else. And I think that with age comes that seasoning where you start to realize less is more, authenticity rules, being congruent. And those are the speakers and the experts or the influencers or the podcast hosts or the podcast guests that make the biggest impact, is that they show up real. And I think that people today on the internet, whether they're on social media or whatever medium that they're consuming their content, I think they have a pretty high BS detector. So I think they can tell pretty quickly, is this something that's going to be of value? Is this a conversation that I might want to actually take away some action steps? Or is this just going to be another, you know, ChatGPT, you know, bland episode of some content?
Yeah. Yeah. And being a good storyteller is good too, right? You're a good storyteller.
It's not just good. It's essential. You know, you know, to make it in the business, you've got to have a high level of content and expertise. You have to have a revenue model. You have to be an amazing storyteller and presenter on multiple platforms, regardless of what the medium is. And then you've got to take massive action to go out and build that network.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I want to go back to when you were a kid. You mentioned something about government housing.
Sure.
Take us back, man. And also, what kind of money ideas and money beliefs did you have and did you have to overcome as you got into entrepreneurship?
So I grew up as a foster kid, bounced around from foster care, and you know, like a lot of foster kids, they either have really good experiences or not so good. Mine was on the not so good side. So when I was 11 years old, I moved into the North Minneapolis housing projects and filled out the application. They needed occupancy, and all I had to do was pay $17 a month, and I had a one-bedroom studio apartment. Now, I lied and said I was 18. Now, at 11 and 12 years old, I was a pretty streetwise kid. I'd been running around the street since I was 7. So by 12, I thought, like most 12-year-olds, I thought I knew everything, right? And so I got this apartment. So I had my own apartment, And I was working at a roller skating rink as a DJ, and this is in the 70s. So some people have to Google what that is.
Brings back memories.
To actually go. That's where all the girls were. So that's where I was. Brings back memories. And so, you know, I was a speed skater and a rink rat back in the 70s, and I would make money as a DJ as a young kid, and that was enough to pay for my government housing. Now, in the projects, you have to leave the lights on or the cockroaches will rearrange the furniture. I mean, these were two-seater aircraft. These are big. And even if you did a bug bomb, it would work for one day, and then they would just go to a different apartment, and then they'd come back into ours. So I got used to it, right? I mean, you get used to living, you know, taking bottles. In the old days, for your younger listeners, you used to be able to return glass bottles for refund. So if you took a tray of glass bottles into a grocery store, they'd give you like $3. Well, we would go to the back of the grocery store where they'd save all their returns, and we would take their returns from the back of the grocery store back into the front of the store and return them. And that's how we made money. So yeah, it wasn't ethical, and you know, you learn things along the way. But what changed the belief system is I found myself in a jail cell at 15 years old, 6 foot by 8 foot, thinking to myself, you know, maybe I haven't made the best life choices up to this point. I really didn't have any role models. I was told I was going to die before I was 25. Everybody I came in contact, now I was just a punk kid. Kids today, we could debate, you know, this, I understand. I never missed a meal. It wasn't like that. I'm not playing the victim role here for your listeners. So don't put any comments in BS about that. But one of the guards came by and gave me a cassette program called The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. And that was the first time that I'd actually heard anything positive programming, but that changed my life. And, you know, there's an old saying that says, once your mind is stretched by a new idea, it never regains the same shape. And so that cassette program got me thinking differently. Instead of doing what I was doing or making money how everybody in my neighborhood and the projects was making money, I decided I'd start a business. So that was my first entrepreneurial journey. That first year in business, I made $35,000. Which in today's equivalence is about $250,000. So not bad from a kid with a ninth grade education and the projects starting my first business. So that's what really started the shift in my brain and going after business and serving customers to get attention as opposed to the other stuff I was doing.
And what kind of business was it?
I started a painting company. And because when you're in the detention, if you cuss, which, you know, I've been known to drop a few F-bombs, they would make you paint. So when I wanted to start a business, I started thinking, well, what experience do I have? Well, I knew how to paint. So I started that painting company. And like I said, the first year in business had $35,000 in sales. And I found a bunch of painters because painters want to paint and drink. They don't want to go out and get the job. So I was the one who was canvassing the houses, knocking on doors. I wasn't afraid to do that. So I was door-to-door selling painting, internal or residential and commercial, inside and outside painting jobs. And that's how I started my first business. And then I had to learn a whole bunch of other things like inventory control. And of course, I didn't pay taxes. And I hypothetically, of course, I don't know what the statute of limitations is on that for the 70s.
Right.
But, you know, I didn't have insurance. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, you're a 15-year-old kid. Since that time, obviously, I had to learn the modalities in business and become, you know, real successful in those other arenas. But, you know, you either learn by doing, which is what I did, or you can go to college or a good college or a good mentor and learn from them. Over the years, I've had great mentors, too. So that's helped.
Yeah. Now, what was the songs that you were playing back then? You remember?
Play that funky music, white boy, rubber band man, any rap that, you know, we're talking old school rap, like Rapper's Delight, you know, it was all, that's the neighborhood I lived in. It was how I grew up. So. you know, I listened to rock and roll too. There wasn't much country in my repertoire. No offense, it just wasn't. But yeah, I listened to a lot, and you know, it was a really interesting experience as you start to make it in business. And I would start to hang around in circles, and I would pinch myself. I'm like, I can't believe I'm with X, Y, and Z person or whatever the people were. And then I realized after I got to know them that they've had their own journeys, their own skeletons in the closets, their own things they've overcome. You know, no one's really an overnight success. I mean, yeah, they took 20 years building it and now they're successful. I think that's true for
they anything. call it an overnight success, right? People call it an overnight. So as you were going on your entrepreneurial journey, going into other businesses and things, like what are some of the main things like that happened that you overcame? Like, you know, like give me something like that kept you up at night when you woke up in the morning, you're like, I can't believe I'm going through this.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a couple quick ones. On the challenging side with employees, you know, I've had embezzlement and thefts and, you know, where, you know, you trust somebody and you really think that they're doing a great job. I mean, one year in my agency, I got a call from the IRS that said, hey, you know, we've got $18,000 you overpaid and we want to know how to allocate it. And I'm like, I didn't overpay taxes. Like, there's no way. And what happened was my controller at the time was not paying my 941 taxes. They were sending in a few dollars here and there to kind of keep the account open, but they weren't sending in the paperwork to justify it. So I was traveling and I said, hey, we need to do an audit. And I came in on Monday and her desk was cleaned out. Everything was cleaned out. So she was gone. Turns out that for 3 years, $250,000 of 941 taxes had not been paid, which means you have 100% penalty. So now I owe $500,000. So first of all, IRS doesn't mess around. If you've got a problem, the penalties are huge. The interest is huge. So I actually had a 9mm that I used to carry and I loaded my 9mm and I'm like, I'm blowing my brains out. This is for educational informational purposes only. Don't anybody get insulted here. But I was like, okay, I'm done. You know, I'm, you know, 27 years old. I can't go on. I mean, I can't believe I'm $500,000 in debt. And then I thought to myself, what I had heard many times is, why would you use a permanent solution to a temporary problem? And I thought, okay, I can sell my way out of it. And the next year, I sold my way out of it. I paid everything off. And I'll tell you something funny. I was down to my last $35,000 that I owed the IRS. And I just was like so pissed that I'd already paid all the penalties. I'd already paid back the back taxes, but this was just interest fees and things. And so I called and I met with the lady. Her name is Debbie at the local IRS agent. And I met with her and I said, hey, is there any way that they can waive these fees? And she's like, no, we don't do that kind of thing. And so when I got done, I sent her office 10 pizzas. And I said, hey, I know that you guys are never appreciated. I appreciate you even considering the fact of writing off the back taxes or the remaining penalties. Thank you for everything you do as a business owner. I know that it's hard work. 2 weeks later, I kid you not, I get a letter in the mail. Dear Mr. Sakes, we just want to inform you that we've reviewed your case. We've decided that you have contributed enough and we have waived all future payments. Consider your case closed.
Damn.
I mean, I'm like 10 pizzas. Okay. Now, some of you are going to try that. I can't tell you you're going to get the same results that I did. But I mean, I've overcome those types of things. You know, there was a time where I was selling to Walmart because I was selling through every channel of distribution. So retail direct, wholesale, through distributors. I had 4,000 dealers across the United States. I was in 10 specialty mail order catalogs like Sky Mall and Sharper Image and Williams Sonoma. So I was in big catalogs selling products and services. And I also was selling to mass merchants like Walmart, Sam's, and you know, Costco wasn't around back then, but Walmart and Sam's, and of course JCPenney's and some of those other stores that are still not around. And anyway, so I was trying to figure out how to make payroll and Walmart hadn't paid me. I was supposed to get, you know, like 70 grand and they hadn't paid me. And so I was in a joint venture with another guy and called him and said, hey, can I take some money out of our other account and cover my payroll? And he's like, no. And he actually said this to me. His name was Randy Gage. He said, there's no free cheese in the mousetrap. Go sell something. I'm like, no, Randy, I just need the money to cover payroll. And he goes, no, that money's ours. You know, and I know you'll get it back, but you created this problem. You need to fix the problem. And I was like, oh, crap. So there it was on a Friday. My payroll on Monday was like $46,000. And I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do? And so I sat down at my computer and I wrote a sales letter. And I said, join Ford's 10K consulting program. I'll work with you for 6 months. I'll do this. I'll do that. And I wrote this really elaborate sales letter. And about 5:30 on a Friday night to 2,800 contacts in my database, in that database that was targeted for that type of client. I sent the letter out saying for the first five people, because I needed 50 grand to cover payroll. Yeah. First five people at 10 grand, I'll work with you for 6 months. I'll become your secret weapon and I'll write your copy and blah, 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 right? I'll create your funnels and all that stuff. And on Monday, I hadn't checked email all weekend. I didn't check my shopping cart, nothing. On Monday, nine people had used their credit cards and bought the 10K program that I had offered. Now, it sounds really impressive, except I had to do the work for the next 6 months. And then when it was all said and done, I learned a lot about how to package consulting services and what to charge because, you know, yeah, I made money, but it was hell for 6 months. But, you know, that's the typical problems that people have, payroll, embezzlement, marketing, market share, competitors, people stealing my patents and copying my products and, you know, lots of stories.
You know, it's so funny when you tell these stories. Like I feel my stomach. It's like physiological reactions. Somatic illnesses start to pop up. Like, you know, you're talking about this stuff and I'm like, holy cow, man. I went through a lot of this stuff too. And one time I had a guy that was taking money from customers, and instead of paying it through the company, he worked for us, paying through the company, telling the customer to pay him Cash App or Venmo, right? And then he would credit the money back to them at closing. Right. So he was taking money from them. They were paying him. We would go to closing and then he would credit them back. But that money that was being credited back was coming from us. So he was taking their money and then basically stealing from us, but like doing it. And I didn't find out about this until like $80,000 in. And so same kind of thing. And it's just like, I can't believe the money wasn't even the big part. Like obviously money's important, but it's like, how could somebody freaking do that to me?
This controller was the sweetest person. Her name is Amy. Is the sweetest person, and I couldn't believe that she was doing that, but she was writing the checks out. She created a phony company, and she was writing the checks out of our bank account. So my P&L and the liability accounts for all my taxes was right. I mean, looking at the reports, it was right. I wasn't the one looking at the bank account, looking at the money in and out. I'm looking at the reports. So she was just writing the checks to herself. So it was zeroing out the liability on the financial reports. So that, and if the IRS hadn't called me, it would have just kept digging deeper. And damn. So there's all kinds of stories where people, like I've had web developers who, you know, we do affiliate programs. Like let's say we're promoting your event or your show and we get affiliate. Well, I'll ask my team in the past, I'd have people where they would set the affiliate program in their name, their bank account. So I'm doing all this promotion. I'm getting all these reports that we're making all these affiliate commissions, but I'm never getting the money. Because they just decided to put it, or they set theirs up first, then they set me up under them, and then they get a cut. And it's like, the lengths that people will go to, especially now with the scams that are out there, identity theft and AI and deep fake videos and things that can go on now are even more scarier. I mean, what people need to be thinking, I know that's not, we'll go there, but
yeah,
man, it's scary.
Well, let's talk about that. You said like earlier in the show that you made a switch or pivot or something you're doing with your business now. What is that involved and why? And then let's get into AI after that to wrap the show up.
So I decided that I would move my agency from just trying to feed hungry mouths to boutique. So we're still working with companies that want high-end done-for-you marketing, but I'm going more for the strategic advisor side, showing them what they need to know and how to do it. Where I come in and look at the gaps between their business and help them close those gaps, whether it's in sales or marketing or operations. And it really helps them increase the average transaction, increase new and repeat sales, you know, help them find their ideal customer, help them build a relationship and help them leverage technology, which is why I got into everything with technology and AI. I mean, I got into internet marketing before it was a thing because I was a direct mail guy. I was sending out millions of pieces of direct mail and learning all the techniques of direct mail. And then when the internet came, I went into that. And then when social media came, went to that. So it's just been a stair step. And now with AI, it's just, they're just tools.
Well, so you were before doing, instead of helping and consulting people, what were you doing before doing it done for you kind of thing?
So I was doing, have both. So I have an agency, Prime Concepts. The logo's actually behind me here on the screen for Prime Concepts, primeconcepts.com. But I also have the speaking side. So I have two companies right now. I have the agency, which is the done for you marketing pieces, where if someone wants to come to me they know I know how to do it, and they would rather trust me. So then I have my team do it. And so we still take clients, but we're much more selective. The change that I went to is, instead of just trying to sell a bunch of jobs, now it's much more selective on, are we a good fit? Because like you said, I can choose who I want to work with and, mm-hmm. and what does it make sense.
That's freedom.
And
right
then
there.
On the speaking side, I spend my time speaking at organizations and associations, franchise groups, as a Hall of Fame keynote speaker on business success. So I'll either speak on mindset, the superpower success, local marketing, digital marketing, winning workplace cultures so that they can thrive. So it helps them solve the biggest challenges that business owners have.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. And then the AI thing, let's talk about this because, you know,
yeah.
AI poses a threat in a way. Now, I got to ask you a question before we get started. If there was a way, let's say that AI was going to destroy humanity and you knew that,
it
would
is.
You, and you had a switch and you had a switch that you had the power to shut it off. Would you shut off AI forever and for good if it saved humanity because you knew for a fact that it was going to destroy humanity? Would you shut the switch off?
Yeah, I would, and I think it will. There is no switch. But
I asked that question for a reason because, believe it or not, I have a friend that was telling me about this question, and there's people that will say no to that question. And he talks about the fact that there's a programming going on, and
some people
have this mind virus, quote-unquote, and they will refuse to, they'll tell you, right? Like, I wouldn't shut it off. Why would I do that? I mean, they don't have a good explanation for it, but they're infected. It's
really good. And I hope that people put comments on the show notes and things that where, when you broadcast and everything, what I would tell you is, I think it absolutely will take care over the world. And the more I learn about it, and I'm an advocate for it. I'm showing people how to use it. I'm into it. I'm an advocate for it. But like I said in the beginning of our show at this episode, is I'm also a critical thinker. And if you look at what you can do right now for free or for $20, or on all the, you know, Google has Gemini, which can see, hear, talk, and, you know, and it's connected to robotics. So that's Google. And there's all kinds of depth we could go into. Microsoft has Bard, and or Google has Bard, but Microsoft has Copilot and ChatGPT, and it's getting built into everything. It's in phones. Last weekend in Phoenix, I spoke in Phoenix. I took my first Waymo completely driverless taxi. So literally, I called the taxi on my phone, on the app. It came. I unlocked the door with my app. I got in. It said hello to me. I talked to the app like an AI driver, asked it where I wanted to go. I hit go, and I drove to the location. We were going to Freshly Laid, a breakfast place in Phoenix. Shout out to them. The food was great. But anyway, so as we're going, the light turns yellow. The driverless car stopped. There's all kinds of traffic. This is a busy four-way, and it's trying to turn left. The light turns green. It pulls out into the intersection, and I'm thinking, oh, man, there's no way. And cars are coming both ways. People are turning, and the last car went by was a bus. And then it turned left across four lanes of traffic. And I just thought,
yeah, there's no way. Therefore, there's no way I would sit in a car like that. Like,
I'm telling
like
you,
if there's a glitch, that bus hits you.
Here's the funny thing. It's surprisingly how when I took the next trip, how comfortable I got that quick. So it's what I'm saying is it's surprising how comfortable I got. It's odd the first time, but I'm telling you, it's kind of like adaptive cruise control. If you like, I have a Jeep Rubicon and it has adaptive cruise control, and I love it'll slow down. It'll keep me four cars length. If a car breaks, it breaks. I mean, I'm paying attention as a driver, but it's a nice feature.
Yeah.
Lane assist.
Yeah,
my wife has a Bronco. It does lane assist. If she goes out of the lane, it you know, rumbles or whatever. I'm just telling you, it's getting built into everything. And with the technology and how fast it's evolving, I think they're talking about the AI constitution and trying to make it so that AI has rules and have programming. Look, people are people and people are stupid. And in general, I'm not talking about your listeners, but I'm just saying, you know, kill switch or no kill switch, I think that it's going to be not too far in the future before we start seeing. I mean, it's going to be planes. It's going to be connected to everything. And it's already 400 times smarter than the smartest human.
Listen, It's moving 1,000 times faster in evolution than the internet did.
Oh, it's I would say or 10 times that. I mean, if you think about what we can do right now, I mean, and all of the devices are listening. So all the data is being used. So, you know, so right now, ChatGPT is ahead of Google. Google will, I think, overtake with Google's products just because of their the size of the data and the amount of data that they've been collecting. And Gemini actually has all of YouTube. I mean, it has everything that's been produced, right? It doesn't know right from wrong, but it's got all that content, millions and billions and gazillions or whatever the next number is above that. And so I think it's not going to be, I think this time next year, as you're listening to this episode, your life's going to be a lot different. You're going to be interacting with things. And it's, to me, it's scary because it's going to give people access and control, you know, over, like if you're a gun owner, I'm a gun owner, you know, but does that mean that the government knows where all the guns are? I mean, it's just crazy to me to think of where we're going. And I think the general public are like a herd. And there's a book I read years ago. It's probably on my shelf sitting behind me over there. It was called Rhinos and Cows. Like it was a rhino mentality or something. And it was how, if you're an entrepreneur, you're a rhino, you got to be thick skinned. You charge after what you want. And you know, you're kind of a rebel and you live in the jungle where it's scary and you know, that kind of thing. And you're a loner because rhinos typically are by themselves. Or you're a cow, which is just being fed, waiting to be slaughtered. And I think that, you know, as your listeners, are you a cow or are you a rhino? I mean, I know I'm a rhino. I know I have cow mentality when it comes to certain things, but I know it's a long road to a tiny house here, C-Rock, but yeah, I think AI, people need to have both eyes open, but at the same time, I wouldn't sit on the sidelines and not use it.
Oh, 100% not. No
way.
Because
you're going to get, you're going to fall behind the understanding of it.
Yeah. Well, look, Ford, I really appreciate you being here, man. And thank you for your thoughts and your vulnerability here on the Woody and Madoff show. Where can people best find you? Is it ProfitRichResults.com? Is that the best place?
Yep, ProfitRichResults.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn. You can Google my name. You know, connect with me on website. If you got questions, let me know. It's just Ford Saeks, S-A-E-K-S. It's spelled last name spelled a little differently, but you can find me anywhere.
All right. Last thing, what's podcasting done for you? What's the importance for people to do podcasting, not just have their own show, but guesting when it comes to brand awareness and marketing and what have you? What are your thoughts on that as we wind out?
Well, I think it helps you create a living laboratory of conversation. It helps position yourself as an expert and an authority in the space. That's why I do it. That's why I'm on shows weekly. And then I have my own weekly show, 11 a.m. Wednesdays on LinkedIn Live and Facebook and YouTube called The Fortify Show. And then I turn those episodes into the Business Growth Podcast, which, of course, you were a guest on. And now I'm a guest on your show. So the value, if someone's considering, they should absolutely consider it. But don't get seduced by technology. Hire someone like you and that one agency that knows what they're doing that can actually help them pick the right shows to be on and facilitate it.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you very much and appreciate those kind words. Ford, guys, listen, if you like were vibing with anything with Ford said, which I was sitting here like, I have my stomach in knots when you're talking about the tax thing, man, by the way. But guys, go check them out.
Profit Rich Results. It's all good now.
Profit Rich. Yeah, you got through it. That's what matters. ProfitRichResults.com or go check out Ford Saeks on LinkedIn, probably on Instagram too. Check them out. Go support them, and thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting us and listening on however you're, you know, paying attention to this content. Make sure you subscribe, like, and let us know you're listening. We'll bring you some more great guests. It's your boy C-Rock in That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Until next time, be that one.